grateful member of Al-Anon and an alcoholic. I'm just one of many Lindas here at the roundup. I have to get my notes out, line everything up. Linda, thank you very much for inviting me to speak. And I'd like to thank everyone in Milwaukee for being here and for having this roundup. It's just, you know, it's just so nice here. And I wasn't expecting that. I don't know. I thought about it. I wasn't. You know, I actually thought, I got to tell you, this is in line with our theme of open minds. I thought we'd probably be in some old brewery meeting, you know. I don't know what. I had this idea of Milwaukee, and I got here, and what I found out is that Milwaukee is a beautiful city. And I came with my ideas, and, this is just another instance where I found out that I was wrong, and that's a good thing that I'm wrong. So, I don't know. I wanna cry. That's what I wanna do. I'm pretty nervous and I'm pretty excited and I don't know. I wanna tell you my story. That's what I'm gonna do. And it is actually the story of the very slow and steady opening of a person's mind and the gradual increase in willingness of my heart, and that has all been done through the grace of God and the 12 steps of this program. I grew up in your basic alcoholic family. I'm the second of eight. Both of my parents are alcoholics. All of my brothers and sisters are either alcoholics or have eating disorders or something. Everybody's got something in my family. And some people have more than one combination of addictions, you know how that goes. And in our family, we had all the staples that go with alcoholism. We had poverty, we had violence, we had sexual abuse, and we had a lot of physical illness. What the poverty looked like at our house was there was one toothbrush for everybody to share, but there was always plenty of booze. You know, that's what, you know, that's how it was. What the violence was like was that my father actually would, like, come off every night and beat everybody up. And while he was beating everybody up, he would say, well, this is because I love you. So that's what the violence looks like. The sexual abuse was your standard. The parents doing it to the kids. The kids doing it to each other. Nobody knew what was, it was just a free-for-all. And the illness, I had a mother who had 13 children in 18 years. With her last 8 pregnancies, she developed toxemia. That meant she was sick the whole time. 5 of the children died at birth. So that was going on. While she was doing that, my father had, we don't, you know, who's counting, it seemed, though, that he had a heart attack for every pregnancy. So she would be in, you know, over here being pregnant, and he would have a heart attack, and she'd be pregnant, and then, you know, who started, you know, it's just kind of all over the place. It was a mess. But, you know, like, what held the whole thing together was alcoholism. You know, like, with enough alcohol, anything was okay. And we could pretend anything was okay. Because when it was fun at our house, it was great. You know, there was like no other place I'd rather be, even to this day. And when my parents were fun, they were the most fun. You know, this one time at a family party, we were all there and it was very hot out and we were all sitting around and there were a lot of people, so there were a lot of dishes and we didn't want to do the dishes. And my mother was like, well, let's throw them out. We were like, yeah. So we did. We just threw all the dishes out. Yeah. So, I don't know. That's kind of how life was at our house. One toothbrush, no dishes. You got the picture. And what I did what I did. You know, I looked at the situation, and what I noticed was that no one was in charge. And I did not like that, so I took on, I actually like moved right into, you know, being in charge. Which I happened to be, you know, I was like very happy to do it. I was very happy to stay home from school and send everybody else off. I'd send my older sister off to school. I get my dad ready for work. I was actually, and to this end, very grateful that I had, whatever it was I had, I mean, you know, I was half in a coma, but, you know, that I really had enough of something to take care of some things, to help out somehow. Those traits that I had at that time actually went berserk later in life, where I couldn't stop taking care of other people and I couldn't stop taking care of things. But at that point in time, they were actually useful to me and to other people in the family. My big thing was that if I could just get the kids to be good, my dad wouldn't drink and my mom wouldn't drink and I was going to be just nice. And this often took the form of a lot of nagging, a lot of threats, a lot of invoking the name of God, promising them life in the hereafter if they would, you know, clean the bathroom. This was not a hit with my siblings. I was also very much like a cheerleader kind of a person, which I still am, you know, which is how it is. But I can remember this one time we were all in the car, and my dad was very drunk, driving in and out of the wrong side of the street, you know, and so here we are, you know, seven kids in the car, this was before the youngest was born, and here he is driving on the wrong side of the street, and I just, you know, I start leading everyone in song, you know, and everyone feels on the song, you know, I was like, and, you know, so that's what I did, not the worst thing. And it did. We did get home. But see, what I thought, what I made up about that was that the reason we got home alive was because of what I did. See, that's what I did. So I continued to test my theory. And at one point, my mother was in the hospital. I don't know when I was, probably like 11. And I had this idea that... I had this idea that if we had like this nice dinner and played restaurant that my dad would be very happy and everything would be just fine. So I proceeded to go ahead and make this big spaghetti dinner and do all this carrying on and put a red checkered tablecloth on the table and actually, you know, it was like fun, it worked, and he was happy and the kids were happy and everyone was happy. And I thought, aha. You know, I really thought I got it figured out. So everybody went to bed, and the next day came, and I thought, well, if it worked so well yesterday, I think I'll try it again. And I did. And I did the whole red and white checkered tablecloth and the spaghetti and the kids and the this and the that. Only this time, it didn't work. And so I really, you know, I didn't know what went wrong. I thought, you know, was the spaghetti not right? Maybe it was the tablecloth. I just did not know it was the disease of alcoholism and that I didn't have a chance against that. So I continued in my effort to be like star daughter. And as I got older, I was like 13, I realized I was having a very, very hard time keeping the house clean, taking care of everything, going to school, doing all this. And my mother was also having a hard time, so we struck this deal. And the deal was that she would give me her Dexedrine if I would keep the house clean. Now, you know, I love that plan. So I took her up on this deal, and I kept the cleanest house. I mean, we had clean light bulbs, you know. I mean, it was clean. And those kids were clean. You know, everything was like that. You know, so I got to be the star during the day, and I got to take care. And I felt so important, and so I felt like such success. I thought, this is it. I have found the key to something, life, I guess I thought it was. The only thing was that the pressure was pretty incredible, as you can imagine. So I started to drink. I mean, no surprise there. I mean, I couldn't sleep. I had to, you know, come on. Something's got to give here, folks. So I actually, at that point, I was like 14 and 15, I started to drink. And, I did like amphetamines during the day and drank at night, and I did that for 9 years. what my alcoholism, it's your basic alcoholism. It really is. It's a lot of drinking, a lot of throwing up in myself and others, a lot of peeing in my pants, in public and how that goes. And a lot of sex with people I didn't know and didn't like, So that was my alcoholism. Yeah. Yeah. I have to laugh. This is really only at an AA function would I say that and people applaud. It's like, are we wonderful? It's a beautiful thing. I also, at that point, I started with an eating disorder, and I had an eating disorder then for like the next 15 years. My eating escalated. I had a $50 a day food habit. I wrote bad checks. I did the same things for food that people do for alcohol and drugs, because I did. So I did do the Great Set and the 12 Steps, and I have been free from an active eating disorder for 8.5 years. Yeah. Okay. And then in my spare time, I smoke 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I really, as you can tell, I really was not hip to this reality thing. Not me. You aren't going to get me. I was going to get through this unscathed. And I did smoke 2 to 3 packs a day for 20 years. I quit 5 years ago for the simple reason that I could not breathe. I was sitting up sleeping. I thought, I got it. And so, it has really been a great life. It really has been, So, as you can tell, everything kept getting worse, right? Worse. It's like, it's a very, it's a long-born story. It's very ugly. All I knew was I kind of harder, and life kept getting worse. I was like, how could this be? I've just taken all these pills, and I've got a clean house, and I'm going to college, and I've got a job, and then this. And I was just suffering. And I didn't even know it. But I knew something was wrong. One of the things I knew was that I couldn't stop eating. So I was like 23 and I went to Overeaters Anonymous. And I hung out there and things started to happen. I thought, well, this is interesting, I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew that these people had something. I didn't even know what it was, but it looked better than what I had. So I was sitting there. So life went on and it was Christmas time, and it was Christmas Day, actually, and I was at a party with some friends, and it was the same group that I got together with. Every Christmas we would get together, we would talk about, what we were going to do next year, and, how good life was going to be next year, So there we were, and I had my big old gas, and I'm just being my cool self, right? And I looked around, and what I noticed was that my friend was saying the same thing he had said every year for the last 5 years. And it went through me like a bullet. And I just got it that if I sat there with them and continued in this way, that in 5 more years I'd be sitting at the same table telling the same story. And I didn't want that. So I really do not know what happened. All I know is that was the day after Christmas, 1978. And that New Year's, and I talked to my sponsor. I think I talked to my sponsor about it. That New Year's, I was at an AA retreat. She said, oh, honey, we're going to a retreat. I said, oh, good. Where are we going? She said, it's an AA retreat. I said, I know. I was like, okay, let's do it. That was that, right? The rest is history, as they say. It was a wonderful thing. I did not know it was my last drink. I didn't know that. How would I? It never occurred to me that was, And it's a good thing I didn't know it, because I have a tendency to make a big deal out of things. Better I should not know. You know how that is. Anyway, so a few months later, I'm like really wrecked now, because I'm going to OA, I'm going to AA, I don't know who I am, I don't know what's going on. And all I know is every time I see my family, I am a wailing hyena. I'm crying. I'm a mess. And my sponsor, Edie, says to me, oh, honey, if you want me to sponsor you, you're going to have to go to Al-Anon. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, no, Edie, you don't understand. I'm in enough programs already. I'm too young to be getting so serious about life. And she says to me, No, honey, you don't understand. So, at that point in my life, I did not want to incur the wrath of Edie. So, I started going to Alan Alice. Like, and I'm like, yeah, you want me to go there? I'll go there. I went. And it really was a wonderful thing. I actually thought I was going to Al-Anon so that I could figure out how to be so that the people in my family would like me. I thought, oh, I got it. I'm going to go, and they're going to tell me how to fit in. They're going to tell me how to have it be okay that everybody's, like, drinking and carrying on. They're going to, this is what this is for. Another thing I was wrong about. I mean, I thought it was going to be. The other thing was that I thought, again, this is so funny. When I first went to Illinois, I thought people would say, well, how's everything? Of course, everything is fine, right? Everything is just fine. Everything is fine. I had, like, Farrah Fawcett, you know, it was really very scary. Not everything is fine. Everything is just fine. And people would say, you know, so, like, where are you from? What kind of, I just come from this big, wonderful, loving Irish Catholic family. Little did I know what was true. Not that there's a love there. It was a little messy. Anyway, so I don't know what about, you know, I was in Lynn's world. Anyway, sent a line there. Anyway, as the story goes, I proceed to do my thing. And what my thing looks like is me giving everyone in the family big books for Christmas, birthdays, holidays. Yes. Yeah, it was really not pretty. The other thing was that, you know, also, this was really a tough one for me. It's really like, wow. Was that, see, my sobriety was not a hit in my family. Not him. And I know other people, I'd go to meetings and they'd say, oh man, my mother's so happy, my sister. I went home my first sober Christmas, and my mother was like, oh, and dear, of course you'll have a whatever. And I was like, no, thank you, I won't. And she chased me out of the house, hitting me over the head, and said, you're ruining our Christmas, you have to drink. I was like, whoa, I got it. And then, not happy. And at my sister's wedding, she was, you know, she's in her bride's dress, and it's time for the toast. And she's like, and of course, you know, you'll toast with some champagne. And I was like, well, thanks very much, but I'll have 7-Up. And so there she was in the bride's dress, hitting me over the head. It's a family thing. Just hit him over the head because I wouldn't drink, you know. And that's just how it was. It was very difficult for me to come to terms with and to actually accept that my recovery did not depend on the approval of anyone in my family. And I really wanted their approval. I wanted them to think it was wonderful. I wanted them to think I was wonderful. And they didn't. They didn't like it. They were pissed off. And you know what? They get to be. They get to have their opinion about it. And they get to have their attitudes and their points of view. And I have certainly tried to change them and have been unsuccessful. And the other thing is that what was also happening at this time is that, you know, my thing was that what I would do is take care of everybody, you know. So the way my weekends would normally look is that I would, like, sit down and call all my brothers and sisters, find out where they were, what they were doing, how much they were drinking, how much they weren't drinking, what they were drinking. Maybe what I could do to keep them from drinking, have they read that blue book I had given them. And they would, like, you know, they didn't want to hang out with me. And I continued to get more upset. But it was funny because when they needed money, guess who they called? They called me. And I always had it, right? That was good. So I would give them my money and I would do their laundry. You know, they'd come over to my house and throw up on themselves and I would clean up. And I thought it was the least I could do for them. And I would sit up waiting and worrying and wondering and calling these, like, you know, drug hotline, what to do when someone takes an overdose of God knows what. And so that's what I did. And on Monday morning, I would wake up and realize that I didn't do my laundry and that I hadn't paid my bill and there wasn't enough left for me and I didn't know what happened. I was like, what happened? How did this happen? How did it happen to me? I'm so good and everything so screwed up. And it was. It really was. And I thought, of course, it was because I wasn't working hard enough or fast enough or good enough. I was doing it all wrong. I think it's always been much easier for me to think that I was just like this big failure, and that's always been easier, and I always feel bad for that I'm not doing it right, when maybe it just isn't my job to do. I didn't know that. I mean, that was new. Yeah. So life went on. When I first came in and early in my recovery, I thought I knew who this higher power was. And my idea of the higher power was some terrorist asshole who is sitting there saying, gonna fuck with me. Excuse me for swearing, but that's about the nicest way I could put it, right? And not only did I think this, I knew it. I knew it like this was in stone. I knew it like everybody knew it. I knew it like it was true. Now, you can imagine how happy I was with a higher power like that, right? No, not happy at all. But this is what I believed. This morning, somebody was talking about beliefs, and I thought, God, what I believed was that, you know, God wanted me unhappy, suffering, deprived, miserable, and, you know, and then, I don't know, I was going to get, like, some big prize when life was over, you know? Wrong. So, and the other thing that really came as a big shock to me, and this was pretty early on, too. You know, when I first came into the program, I thought, wow, is this great? We're all so sick, and everybody's so unhappy. You know, should I find a happy person? No, I did find a few happy people, but I was, like, looking for the sad ones. Right? And I was like, this is great. We're all going to be, like, sad together, and isn't this? And then I was like, my sponsor's like, oh, Linda, by the way, we are here to get well, not to be sick. And this has been very critical for me, because my tendency, of course, is to always be sick. I mean, I grew to it, you know? And what I found out in the program is that this is not about being sick. It is about being well for me. It is about being responsible. It is about feeding myself right. It's about taking care of myself and being, you know, just taking care of things, which I didn't like, but I sure it has worked out very well for me. You know, in this being restored to sanity business, one of the things, Scary. You know, I always think, I love it. You know, people, when I first came in, I thought, oh, man, this is going to be great. I'm going to get sane. I thought, I'm going to get this corporate job. I'm going to be thin. I'll get nice haircuts. You know, it'll be great. You know, lots of money. I had no idea, you know, what recovery was really. I mean, my recovery is messy. It's, like, emotional. I carry on a lot. And that's, you know, this is what well looks like for me today. Does that fit my picture? We're all going to be, like, sad together, and isn't this? And then I was like, my sponsor's like, oh, Linda, by the way, we are here to get well, not to be sick. And this has been very critical for me. That was eating. Sheila came to my house and taught me how to put stuff in drawers. You know, I didn't know that stuff. I didn't know what they were for. I was like, great, I got all these drawers. What do you do with them? So Edie came up. This woman never flinched. I mean, she had herself and me, you know, just taking care of things. And she said, oh, yes, dear. And we put all the socks together. We put the t-shirts together. I was like, hey, how about that? It was just... Yeah. Oh, it's just too great. The other thing that came as a big shock to me, and this came after a while, is that all the stuff I had done all those years, all my doingness, all my, well, I don't know, you know, meeting people at 2 a.m. and giving them money and, you know, all my keeping track. My favorite was keeping track. You know, sometimes I used to think to myself I would, like, make graphs of where all the alcoholics are. I'm like, oh, they're over here. You know, it's just crazy. But, you know, it never made any difference. It still, it shocked me. I'm like, what do you mean it didn't make I was so good, or I don't know what I was, and it didn't get you sober, and you didn't even, you know, make it. It just didn't work. This still, to this day, I still can't get over it, as you can tell. Which is why I keep going to meetings. And so life went on, and I found myself at this step, right? So I have, like, compiled this inventory, you know, the size of Webster's. And I walk in to see my pal Edie again, and I, like, read this thing ahead. I'm carrying on. Of course, it is not a simple matter for me. And she sits me when it's over. She says, well, that's lovely, dear, but that was your father's inventory. Now I want you to go home and take your own. Yeah. Sad, but true. I mean, it really, and I didn't even know it. Oh, good. Anyway, so, isn't that funny? It's so awful. So I do an inventory, you know, and this time it was about me and my character defects. A little bit about my denial. And, you know, so that's how that was. Then I found myself, you know, so a few steps later, I'm at the ninth step, and, you know, the ninth step is, whatever it is, except when it does so, it injures them or others, right? So, major recommends the step I always have the blackout on. Anyway, funny, isn't it? Funny how that happens. Anyway, so what happens is, I am going to, the sister who beat me up at the wedding, right, I'm going to see her to make amends. So I call her up, and I'm like, and I'm serious. Right, this is life and death, and I'm serious, right? So I call her up and say, I have to come and talk to you, it's serious. And I pull up in front of her house, and I go in, and she's, you know, of course she lives in the suburbs, you know, pulls me right in, suburbs, big house, kids, the whole bit. So I go over there, I go up the stairs, and I go, listen, there are some things I want to talk to you about from the past. And she jumps up and she says, ah! Hit and chases me out of the house, all the way down to the car. And I got it. You know, she didn't want to talk to me. She didn't want to hear my amends. She got to reject me. And see, I thought it wasn't until that moment when I got in my car, I got who these amends were for. They weren't for her. She was not interested, clearly. You know? But that what I got was that I had done my best. I also got that it is unrealistic to expect an active alcoholic to sit down and have this conversation. I'm not saying it's impossible, but given the particular alcoholics I know and love, not likely. And that's okay. That really is. She has every right in the world to reject me. I didn't like it. I still don't like it. And it's, you know, it is how it is. And I think at that point I really began to let go of a lot of the expectations I had for people around me. So I don't know. So it's just like doing the steps, what I noticed was that I started changing, you know, that I was being different. To somehow that this God who I started, the God I started out with, this terrorist, was starting to change. Funny. It's going all right for me. Things were a lot better. What I noticed, there were no alcoholics sleeping in my living room. No one had thrown up in my bathroom lately. No one had borrowed too much money that they couldn't pay back. And my life is starting to get a little more simple. And this was nice. It was a nice thing. I didn't know what to do with myself. But that's okay, too. I found out. I want to tell you about how it is now. So the way it is now is that the things are actually pretty great for me. They really are. And out of my family, I have three sisters now who are in the program. They're not in as long as I think they should be in. They don't work the kind of programs I think they should work, but it's okay. But I'm praying for them. oh, it's so bad. But you know what? And then I have this brother who goes in and out. And I'll tell you, 5 years ago, I knew how many days sobriety he had. I knew what meetings he was making. I knew what meetings he wasn't making. And today, I don't know. And you know what? I don't want to know. I don't have time. It's like I don't want that feeling inside. You know, I can't track everybody anymore. So, progress. What I realized in the last few months is I have three of my sisters, I have five sisters, and three of my sisters I'm friends with. And for a long time I was like, you know, why can't I be friends with all of them? And, you know, and I should be able to, and, you know, the whole litany and blah, blah, blah. And what occurred to me was that in any group of nine people, if I can have three friends, that is a miracle. So it's actually, I mean, I'm doing better than I, you know, than realistic, you know, better. It's good odds. Very good odds. So these three sisters who I'm friends with. I'm not close to my parents at this point. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not, you know, and that's all right, too. I have this sense, you know, what I want to do with relationships is I want to get them in stone and keep them there. Nobody's going to change. Nobody's going to grow, especially me. We're all just going to stay right here. And it hasn't been that way. It's just, you know, it's messy stuff. So right now, I'm not real close to my parents. I've actually had in the last year a lot of incest flashbacks and revelation is what I'll call it, which for someone who is about to graduate, when the incest hits, there's no graduation for a while, folks. You know, I keep thinking, oh, I should have done this when I was, you know, 2 years on the program. And I actually felt like embarrassed that, oh, my God, you know, I've been around a long time and I'm just getting into this stuff and what's the matter with me? And there's nothing wrong. You know, it's just taking me a long time. I've had a lot of ground to cover. You know, and the truth of the matter is that today I'm strong enough to deal with this. That God has actually, you know, seen to it that, you know, I'm able to, like, make a living and take care of myself and deal with this stuff. And that I don't have to worry about running out to drink or blow my head off. That, you know, that this is how it is for me. And I really am grateful for the way it's gone. I have a sponsor who says to me, after I called her earlier this year, I go, you aren't even going to believe what is coming up for me. And she says to me, oh, Linda, there's always East to go. And I'm like, ugh. You know, I love these sponsors. I really do. I think they're great. Anyway, the way it, the last interaction I had with my father a few months ago, I went to my dad. This was not an Amanda. I just wanted to talk to him. I wanted to find out, like, what happened? You know, what happened at our house? What was going on? For 20 years, I had thought about all the violence. I had thought about all this stuff, and I it wasn't going away very well. So I went to talk to him, and I said, so, you know, I told him, I said, you know, Dad, I'm really upset about all the violence. And he says, what violence? I said, well, you know, all the beatings every night. And he says, he looks me straight in the face, he goes, wasn't that awful, the way I had to restrain your brothers and sisters from beating me up? And I sat there, now, and I was like, I looked into this man's eyes, and I got that was true for him. And you know what? The conversation was over. I also got that, you know, I'm in Linda's world. He's in Jack's world. He really is. And he gets to be there. And I could sit there and talk to him from now to... I was like, now, Dan, let me tell you the real story. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It really does. I mean, this is... You know, 20 years it took me to ask him, like, Dad, what's going on? You know? And it doesn't matter. It's over. And this is how it is for him. And I have a different interpretation of the story. And we all get to have our own. And I don't like it. And that's okay. You know, it's how it is. I recently saw my youngest sister. I have a sister who's 17 years younger than I am. And, when she was a baby, she called food Linda, you know, which was how it was. I mean, I cooked for her, so she called food Linda. And I was at a meeting, and my sister came in. So she comes in, and she sits down. I immediately feel my heart jump across the table, put it back in my body. And at the end of the meeting, what happened was I sat in my chair. I wanted to go over. I wanted to, like, rush over, put my arms around her. I didn't want to let anybody talk to her. I was going to protect her. I was going to give her the literature. I was going to tell her how it is, right? I was going to give her the meeting list. I did not move from my chair. I was like, God, you have to help me. And with that, this kid goes out. She gets a phone list. She leaves his phone number. She's talking. She's yakking with somebody over there. And I was like, God, thank you. But today, I do not have to rescue this kid. Not that I could do it. I mean, that's a joke of it all. I mean, she was fine, right? Just talking to people. It was like, and I was like, thank you, God. Thank you that I do not have to interfere today. That is a real blessing. So there have actually been a lot of miracles in the area of family for me. The area of work has been another area of my life that has been turned upside down. What I always wanted in life was I wanted a regular job. You know, I wanted to wear a navy blue suit, pantyhose, nice white blouse. I wanted to get a paycheck every 2 weeks and have health insurance. I tried it. Title insurance. It is the bastion of boredom in America. And there I was. I was very unhappy. Very unhappy. So I left title insurance to go back to graduate school because I felt God was calling me. Champaign-Urbana graduate school. So I went down there, and I got to tell you, I was taking out loans, right? Other people get to go to graduate school. I am going, right? Doing my thing. Anyway, I go to graduate school. I try every day for a year and a half. I had this idea that if I got this master's degree, then I would be important. And then, you know, the whole bit. I mean, I'll be special. I'll be important. You'll shake my hand. I don't know what's going to happen. The only problem was I cried every day. There was not a day that I woke up and said, oh, this is great. I love it. I don't like the people. I didn't like the program. I don't like anything. But I went. Because, see, I thought at that point, I thought that I had proved that I could finish a commitment. I had to prove that I was like everybody else. I had to prove that I, you know, the whole, I had to prove something to somebody out there. And one day I got up and I realized that maybe, just maybe, I was not supposed to suffer like this. I didn't know what I was supposed to do, but I got that maybe this was, because every day I would say, God, I will suffer as much as you want me to suffer. I will be in as much pain. I will just open myself up to pain. I will be unhappy. I will be miserable. And one day, this voice was like, well, maybe, just maybe, you're not supposed to be this unhappy. So what I did at that point was I went out and got a new higher power. I went out, I said, can this guy, this is bad. To the point, of course, you know, you got to get it. This is 7 years into it, right? No rush here, you know. But anyway, I can this guy. And I get a higher power that actually wants me to be happy. I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know what happy is, but I figure it's going to be better than this graduate school. It's really bad. You know, so anyway. Oh, you know, the other thing about it was that I could do it. You know, I was, like, good at it. And I always had this thing where it's like, well, if you can do it, you better. You know, and no. I mean, why? Get out of here. Anyway, so on to the next thing. So while I'm in graduate school, you know, writing papers, carrying on, doing my thing, on the side, I'm reading tarot cards. My lover had taught me how to read cards. So I have lines of students. I'm practicing. I'm learning cards. I come back to Chicago, and, I mean, you know the rest of the story, right? So today I am a card reader, and I practice shamanism, which means I'm a medicine woman. And this is what I do professionally. And I left all of that behind. And a day at a time, I am thrilled. I like go, I'm like, yeah, let's read some cards. It's great. You know? Good. You know, and the thing about it is, of course, a couple years into this, it occurs to me that I have every Al-Anon dream job. That I give people advice and they pay me a lot of money for it. It's great, isn't it? It's super. Life is so funny. Anyway, so what's going on? I did not know. For anybody who thinks that recovery might be boring, talk to me. It's not. It's just it's too much fun. So what's up for me in my work right now that's really tough is that, you know, I want to do it all myself, right? And nobody's helping me, right? So but what's happening is, like, my business is big and I can't keep up and all this. So a couple of weeks ago, I actually had someone come in and clean my office, you know, which really, you got to get it. For me, I'm like, no one is touching my things. No one is coming in my office and no one can clean as well as I can, right? Anyway, I am today willing to let people help me. I don't know what's next. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how. I'm like, I have this business that's like a master, and I need help. And I'm like, okay. And I know that God will show me, you know. And, you know, I'm just making it up. I'm like, all right, what next, you know. And we'll see what's next. I really don't know. Plans are a bad idea for me. As much as I do love a good plan and scheme, they never run out. I have yet to have a plan that's worked. So anyway, that's what's going on with my work. If it weren't for the L&M program, I don't think I could have come out. I mean, this is really, can we talk? I just said, nah. Uh-uh. Not me. I'm too worried about what people think. So, and what happened, this is very interesting. When I was 12, I went, you know, I was like making out with my girlfriend Barbara, and I'm like, hey, this is great. So I go, and I don't know where I heard this word lesbian, but I knew I heard it somewhere. I went to my mother, and I said, so, Mom, what's a lesbian? My mother, always the diplomat, Dottie, starts screaming, I hate my friend. Run and dishes house. I was like, I got it. This isn't a good idea. So I proceed to, I mean, you know, the rest is history. You know, in order to be with men, I had to drink a lot of martinis. And I did. And so I did that. And then when I first got sober, you know, I was first in the program, I was like, I was going to be alone. I was going to be alone. It was going to be me and God. That's good for, you know, not that long. given who I am, didn't go over. So then I got on the thing. I was like, I loved bar girls. These bar chicks, loved them. You know? These are the ones who cannot be there on time if they show up at all. The ones who have no money. The ones who can't, you know, they don't remember your name. Those were the girls I was crazy about. They were exciting. Life was dramatic. And then what happened? You know, I mean, that's how it was. It was like, yippee! You know, if they were there, it was like my mother was there. Yeah! You know, if they're not, well, too bad, you know? And so I did that for a while, but what I found out was that, like, you know, I've been to a lot of Al-Anon meetings at this point, and I kept going, Edie kept saying, oh, honey, go to that Al-Anon. And I would, like, go to Al-Anon. I'd be out with these girls, and I was like, oh, this is not working. So then, I want to tell you what happened. When I was 30, I came out to my parents. So, you know, all this stuff, of course, all this stuff's going to happen. So I go over to my parents, and I am suffering because I have this, like, massive dishonesty with them, right? I am, like, not being honest, and I can't live with it, and I'm, like, carrying it in the house. And, you know, like, boom, right? And everything's still fine with them. So I sit down, and I'm, like, I have to talk to you guys. I feel such a gulf in our relationship. I'm doing the whole thing. I'm, like, God, you have to help me. And so I say to my parents, and I'm a lesbian. Well, do I have to tell you what my mother did? She hates lesbians! She starts throwing dishes! I mean, it was like, same thing. It was like, the thing I had, like, lived my life to avoid. I mean, she was doing, you know, it was like, and I lived through it, you know? She didn't like when I was 12, she didn't like when I was 30, and I was fine! I was fine. I walked out of there. I was like, see you later. What am I going to do? You know? So then what happens is I meet my lover of today. My lover is Lisa. She's actually, I got to tell you, I got fixed up on this date. And, we went out to lunch, and I sat there, and I thought to myself, this is the nicest human being I have ever met in my life, and I will probably never see her again. I had never been out with anyone so nice. I was like, wow. And I was like, and what do you do for a living? You know, I'm trying to be like, I don't know who I'm trying to be like, somebody I'm not, right? So, it was bad. It was really bad. So she said, you know, this is a woman who's had like the same profession for years. And she was, I was like, wow, you know, I started the job of the month club. You know, I was like impressed. This woman was hot. And, you know, I looked at her and I thought, why would she want to be with me? You know how that goes. So of course, I'm, you know, too good, not me. I'm not going to be happy. You can't make me. So anyway, what happened, though, was that, like, 10 days after our first meeting, I wanted to go out with someone who was nice. I wanted to go out. I wanted to see a movie. I wanted to eat a cheeseburger. I wanted to, like, talk about something other than the relationship. I just wanted, and, you know, so I called her up, and we've been together ever since, through the grace of God. And it is a miracle. It really is wonderful. It's great. The thing that's really incredible about this relationship, and the thing, like, Lisa's in the program, and it's a wonderful thing, you know? And this is a woman who keeps her word, you know? She makes a promise, she keeps it. I'm like, wow, this is great. She keeps her word, she's trustworthy, she doesn't, like, try and mess with me, and I still, every day, I'm like, I'm still waiting, you know, like, so who could be this nice, you know? But Lisa really is just wonderful. It's wonderful. So, and I'm really grateful. I know that if it weren't for Al-Anon, you know, I have this thing, like, when I start getting nuts, when I start getting worried about my life and what I'm going to do, what I do is I plan Lisa's wardrobe, right? And it really is. This is now the tip-off for me that I have, like, crossed the line. It's like, come on, Dad. The thing that's amazing is this woman can dress herself. This is what I've noticed. And she looks great, you know, and she doesn't need my help, which is very frustrating because, you know, it's like, how do I be with somebody who does? She does not need me. I got it. She doesn't need me. And it's insulting. And I got it, but she likes me, you know, it's great. Now, not really what I thought it would be. So one of the big things in my life today is that recently, it's 3 weeks ago, Lisa and I want to have a family. And Lisa was pregnant, and 3 weeks ago she had a miscarriage. And it really is, it's sad. You know, it's sad. And I do not like sad. I'll take anger. I'll take fear. I'll take the sad stuff. So a couple of things happen in this. In the middle of this, I decide that what I'm going to do is fix this, right? I'm going to fix this. So I get on the horn and promptly start calling all my friends saying, I have to find a baby for my girlfriend quickly. Can you help me? Now, because see, I want to skip the part where we're sitting on the couch crying. I just want to, like, right over there. And I want to, like, start up the next thing. And so anyway, you know, and through the grace of God, I did not do that for 6 months. I did it for 2 days. This is a miracle. The other thing that was really wild is that while all this is going on, so she first is the first sign that there's going to be a miscarriage, and she has this appointment for the CNC. And in the meantime, I decide, great, I am not leaving her side. So, which is fine. I mean, it's all fine, but I, like, go through all this elaborate stuff to rearrange my schedule. Except for this one thing I couldn't change that was 2 hours long, right? I couldn't change it. It was a bunch of people, blah, blah, blah. So wouldn't you know that the 2 hours that I'm out of the house, she has this miscarriage. And I'm like, isn't that incredible? You know, again, all my planning, all my trying to fix, all my, you know, I just couldn't control this. And that's just how it was. And it didn't matter if I had the best plan in the world. It's just how it went. The other thing was that in the middle of this, I got a call from some people to do some work in California, and they said, we need to know immediately. So here I am. The love of my life is heartbroken. I'm heartbroken, and I have to tell her I'm going to go to California. Not that day. I mean, not till the end of October. But in my mind, I was like, I can't do this. I have to say no. I can't go. I cannot say this to her at this point in time. I don't want to talk about it. I want it all to go away. And I prayed about it. I was like, God, you have to help me. It's my favorite prayer. God, this is your chance. So I said my favorite prayer again. And I talked to my sponsor, and my sponsor said, Linda, you get to live your life. I'm sorry that there's a tragedy, and you get to live your life. And so I got to go ahead, make my plane reservations, take care of business, and I got to tell Lisa, and everything's fine. You know, it was hard. It was awful. You know, and I thought I would drop dead from it. I really thought I'd say these words and fall on the floor. It didn't happen. But I always think that. I think any time I have to tell the truth, I will, like, drop dead. I never got over that. Anyway, I think this is really about it. I could talk for 3 days. You know, when I first came into the program, I couldn't talk. People would say, all right, fine. You know, I couldn't. I mean, it was like, I couldn't talk. And now I can't stop. So I just want to say that this open mind, willing heart stuff for me today. You know, God has been very good to me. God has been nothing but good. I've fired that old SOB and got this new one. If you don't like your higher power, get a new one. I mean, there's lots of them out there. And what I notice is that the better my higher power is, the better my life is. You know, I have a higher power today who wants me to be happy, who likes me to have some money and some fun and good sex and live in a decent place. And, you know, that's okay. This is, you know, it's great. This is what life is. And it's not what I thought. You know, have I been wrong. I am not who I thought I was. I thought that I was just, I don't know what I thought. I thought I was a second-class citizen. I thought I was here to clean the house and take care of the kids and blah, blah. I mean, that's what I thought. And that is not true. It's just not true. I thought that other people were out to get me. I thought that they hated me. I thought they were going to fuck with me. You know, I thought all of that. I have been very wrong. I've been very wrong about other people. What I have noticed, like even here tonight, I mean, I don't know. I just don't like, I feel like all this good stuff comes from people. I don't know where, it's like, wow. You know, it's wonderful. People are not who I thought they were. And God is certainly not who I thought God was. You know, God, as I understand God today, is certainly a higher power worth having. I think if someone had told me how many of her years ago when I first came in the program that, you know, that I would be a lesbian tarot card reader, I would have told them to jump in the lake and happy. So, you know, I just really have to, I didn't know that I could be happy. I didn't even know what this happy, what's happy? And why would anyone want to be happy? I mean, I thought, you know, I'm really glad I didn't wait till the end of my life for the prize. You know, this really is it. And it is, it's that day at a time thing. You know, it's like I say, well, you know, oh, I want to move here and I want to go there. And it's like, well, what about today? You know, so today for me is wonderful. I am really grateful to be in all the 12-step programs. I am, it's like, and you know what it's like? I love being in Al-Anon. It's great. I love being in AA. It's like wonderful. I love being an addict. It's like we are the best people. I'm like, yeah. You know, but this is, for me, it's like, oh, it's so much fun. And so I don't know. Thank you very much. I am so grateful that I got to be here tonight. And thank you, Linda. And thank you to the committee. And thank you, God. I mean, God has just been nothing. I mean, really. I have a wonderful higher power. And I am really blessed, and I thank all of you.